Well, I tell you're going to get me going now because I get it. Golf is it's not the NBA. It's certainly not the NFL or college football. I mean, those are the big three, obviously leading with the NFL. But if people, I always knew this from being at a golf shop and on a lesson tee all my career, that, that golf fan is really into the sport, and there's so many different ways that you can kind of wager on the game.
Oh, necked it.
Actually, I think it's...
All right, welcome back to the Banty Podcast. I am your host, Andrew Winter, with co-host Tom Hawley. Today is Wednesday, September 20th. We just had Keith Stewart on the show. Keith is the owner, founder, writer at readtheline.com. Really, probably one of the best and forward, most thinking sports gambling networks. So definitely recommend everyone check that out. And then we talked with Keith really just about his upcoming in the golf world, how he got started, how he fell into the world of golf betting, and then dove into the Ryder Cup. But yeah, it was a fun conversation. Tom, what did you think?
No, I thought it was super interesting. He talked about a lot of things that I have not really thought about with my, definitely with my golf betting. He kind of put me on blast. I'm always a set the lines on Wednesday, don't think about it again until Sunday night, and that is absolutely not the way to be thinking about golf. So I'm glad that he opened
he called that
on
second
that one.
Pins. It was so good. I think that was totally right.
I'm shooting at the front right pin every week, and I feel like an idiot.
It is funny. Like he really went hard about live action, where I think if you are, again, I do the same thing. Like Wednesday night, I'm like making my picks for the weekend, and it just sounds like you're going to lose it like at scale that way. But if you can bet when people are on the course, you can bet on like a first quarter, second half team. I actually wanted to ask him this, but one thing that would be very cool is like the same way that there are like second half teams in football, I'm sure there are players that were like, it's even more true than that, because like the back nine of a golf course might be like fundamentally better suited to someone's game. So if you can bank on them, not doing as well on the front nine, but account for that on the back, you can find some value there. I wanted to pull that thread out, but anyways, I think he made a good case there.
No, definitely the Mackenzie Hughes no-laying up always is the Hughes 66, exactly. 66 to backdoor top 20. Yeah, there's got to be some more guys out there who are doing things like that.
Yeah, so it was cool. Any takeaways for you on the Ryder Cup now? Like, did you change your mind at all, or have you?
No, I know we're gonna win. He definitely confirmed that for me. I didn't need him to give me the data. I know he has the correct thoughts in there, and just hearing him say that we're his pick, I'm pretty confident now.
Yeah,
I still don't know much about this course.
I mean, I think words can only we gotta wait till that's on TV to do it justice anyway. But I'm pumped. We're 9 days out, and it's going to be crazy. I think we have the Solheim Cup this weekend. I'll definitely be tuning into that as well. Pretty excited for the ladies to tee it up in Spain. But yeah, that was the show. So thank you again to Keith Stewart for coming on. Check him out at readtheline.com. And without further ado, here's the show.
This could be close. This could be really close.
Keith, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be with you guys. And can't wait to get into the Ryder Cup and a whole lot more.
Same here. I think it's a big week ahead of us, so we're all getting pretty excited. Keith, I guess, can you tell us a little bit about you? I mean, I know you're at Read the Line. You've been in the golf world for forever, but even just sort of the background of where are you calling in from? And then we'll sort of think about how you fell into the golf world and golf betting.
So my studio here that you see in the background is in central New Jersey, just outside New York City. Born and raised in New Jersey. I got involved in the golf business many years ago. PGA professional by trade. I still am. Although most people always think of PGA professionals as your club professionals or teaching professionals. I did that for a long time, but then I've pivoted since 2018 when Congress went ahead and they repealed PASPA, which was the law that allowed states to decide whether or not they wanted to do sports betting. So I had some very unique experiences in my professional career after I graduated Holy Cross up there in beautiful Worcester, Massachusetts. Like I said, I went up and down the East Coast working at different golf clubs, and probably the most influential apprenticeship that I had was at a place called Isleworth Country Club from 1998 to 2003. And if you don't know the name of that club, it's the home of Tiger Woods during that time. Yeah. And that's the club that he lived and played out of. And I experienced the Tiger boom firsthand. And I saw a lot of when golf's popularity kind of skyrocketed in the late 90s, how people took advantage of that from a business point of view. And fast forward to the Bryson pandemic, all of that boom and the popularity that golf has seen in the last 3 to 4 years, I kind of took notes back 20 years ago and, you know, was just kind of waiting and looking for the best opportunity to kind of shift my role from being just a, you know, a club leader to an ambassador for the game. And like I said, when Congress made their move, I knew that for me, being from New Jersey, and one of my passions was always picking winners of golf tournaments, that I was going to build a golf betting business. And I did that. It's called Read the Line. And it's cool to be with you guys today. For you to have interest in what I'm doing shows that I'm probably on the right track.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's been super interesting over the last few years. Like, I love betting on golf. I think typically it's one of the things where I feel like it's different than betting on other sports. I think just specifically because of the format, if anything, it's a little bit more like horse racing as opposed to sort of matchups. But yeah, let's think about that for a second. Can you tell us like what it is that about picking on golf events in particular that you feel like is so special?
Well, I tell you, you're going to get me going now because I get it. You know, golf is not, it's not the NBA. It's certainly not the NFL or college football. I mean, those are the big three, obviously leading with the NFL. But if people, I always knew this from being at a golf shop and on a lesson tee all my career, that, you know, that golf fan is really into the sport. And there's so many different ways that you can kind of wager on the game. And when you start to really kind of pay attention to the way that the betting world works, especially in 2023, it gets pretty exciting pretty quick. So that's why I wanted to build the business. At the end of the day, golf does what I call it. It does four things that make it really, really attractive to bettors. And I can tell you without a doubt, much like Topgolf, there are way more people betting the game than there are even playing it. Right. And it's super exciting to me that their introduction to the game is through a PGA professional to appreciating the men and women that play it, because at Read the Line, I cover the LPGA and the PGA Tour. But why do they get so into it? Well, there's four reasons why. The first is what I call the 4-day lottery. And that is, Tom, let's get you involved here for a second, right? Like, who do you root for in the NFL?
Oh, Patriots fan, die hard. Always will be.
All right. You think the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl. Whether they are or aren't, you think that they're going to win the Super Bowl, and their odds are, let's say, they're like 18 or 20 to 1. Okay, great. You know, so 7 months go by. If all the injuries work out, if Tom Brady doesn't get hurt back in the day, you know, all of those things work out. 7 months later, you get paid. How about in golf? Tournament starts on Thursday. I mean, the favorites are 20 to 1. I had Victor Hovland at the Memorial. He was 20 to 1, and my readers won. Okay.
Oh, nice.
In 4 days, they got paid. Hence the 4-day lottery. Golf offers the longest odds and the best paydays in the shortest time window. You can't do that on a Sunday in NFL or Saturday college football. You'd have to pick like 7 games in a parlay, and when will that ever work, right? It's much easier to say, hey, Patrick Cantlay will win the BMW, and then I wait 4 days and I get paid. The second thing is that it goes back to football betting again. Everybody bet the Super Bowl because they wanted to bet the coin toss or how long the Star Spangled Banner was going to go. Who scores first? Well, those are called proposition or prop bets. And there was a million of them for just that game, but people would get all excited about them. Well, golf offers the most amount of prop bets. There's 156 players in a field over 4 days, each playing 18 holes a day. So you can bet head-to-head matchups, top fives, top 20s, top 10s, low score for the day, low player for the day. Like, you can just bet so many different things. The third thing comes down to everyone was betting pregame. Right. And then they go watch the football game, and however it went, it went. All right. But that's not happening anymore. Most people are actually waiting till that first couple of drives to happen, and then they're hitting the spread because they have a feel for how the game, you know, is going. You know, kind of the temperature of is one team nervous? Is one team playing better than the other? Is it going to be a low scoring game, a high scoring game? So all of that in play or in game or live betting, right, is something that, you know, if you want to bet the Super Bowl again, it's 4 hours long. You want to bet a golf tournament, it's 4 days long. So it gives you so many more options for in-game ads. And then the last one is quite honestly, is that golfers bet. It's the fabric of the game. So
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't need to convince anybody to say, hey, let's bet $5 on whether or not, you know, Ricky Fowler is, you know, going to finish top 10 this week. You know, if you're a Ricky Fowler fan, you're probably just going to bet it every week, you know, because you're used to doing it as part of the game. Just because, Andrew, you and Tom and I sit and watch a football game, A, doesn't mean that we've ever played football. And B, right. We probably don't have some sort of financial connection to the game.
I think that's so true. Like, I don't play football. Tom, go ahead.
I had a few things based off. Yeah, that was my immediate thought. When I am doing my Wednesday setup for the week, it usually starts with college football. None of the guys I'm reading ever had the stuff to play SEC football. And I think that's the niche that you mentioned that you serve so perfectly, is you actually have the in-depth experience of what you're talking about that you really can't get with many other sports, because as you mentioned, golf just lends itself so naturally to this gambling. Like, huge hockey fan, huge football fan, you're not really going to see the guys on CBS Sports, on Sports Action, on ESPN telling you these lines who have played this game at this level, which is why I think this is such an interesting spot you found.
Well, it's been an interesting spot for me, because when I looked at the whole kind of ecosystem, there were a bunch of golf writers or golf personalities that were forced to do it. So they knew golf, but they didn't know anything about betting. And then there was a bunch of dudes in their mom's basement with Excel spreadsheets on Twitter yelling at one another. And there was this huge space in the middle. And I just kind of jumped in there. And there's three things that I do that just make it very unique to what's happening at Read the Line and why we're so successful at picking winners is that, one, I go to the events, so I'm on site. Two, I do a ton of in-play betting, whereas most websites, DraftKings, et cetera, all of them, you know, Bleacher Report, The Athletic, they all write a report before the tournament starts, and then they go silent. And, you know, the audience really wants more information once it begins. You know, and then the third thing is that I'm a PGA expert. You know, I taught the game for over 10,000 hours. You know, when I go to the actual... you know, golf course, and I'm on the range, and I'm walking, and I'm looking at Colin Morikawa. I'm like, is he working or is he working? Like, is it working? You know, and is he someone to bet? Is he live this week or is he working on it? You know, and I know that with my, you know, my eye from being a PGA professional for over 20 years. You know, it's really a lot of fun.
That led into my next question. Sorry, I'm a huge live guy. I think the last big hit, Holy Cross BC, was a big live moment for me. Not to throw back to the Crusaders. That I was going to ask you, when you're on course for a weekend, on a range for a weekend, are you looking at weather? Are you looking at conditions? Is it who just looks like it's clicking on Friday afternoon? Is there like a big indicator usually for you with a live play? Is it related to play or is it related to course, where the field's headed?
I would take the guys that practice, you know, like I thought something was up. Now, I that would be pure speculation, so I can't come out and say that. But if I just avoid him and I bet other people, I mean, I would think you would know what I meant. I wanted absolutely. Victor, right? And I wanted Xander. And those are the types of guys that I wanted, and I didn't want Rory. And then sure enough, the first day he's got back issues. Well, okay. You know, now we all know, but I knew from being there that that was not the play because he wasn't getting ready for the tournament for whatever reason it was. You know, he could have been his family in time. I don't know what it was, but it was something that had his attention away from that. And then it also happens during the events. I mean, there's so much information just circling around those sites. And I think I went to 22 different PGA Tour combined LPGA and majors this year. So like when you're on the I went to every single designated event this year, right? I was on the property for all of them. So it's one of those things where you see what's going on and it definitely gives you an edge. And I bring that to the content that I create.
Yeah. It's interesting. You almost make it sound like the onus is on the player to show you something. Like they don't have to disclose if they're doing something with their family, but by not being at the range, they're telling you just as much. And I know that there's talks now of like an injury report. Do you expect anything like that to actually come to life, or what are your thoughts there?
Well, there's going to need to be an evolution because golf has a unique set of circumstances, and we're starting to see stories like this pop up more and more. And the PGA Tour, I'll give them some credit. I can't speak on behalf of DP or LIV. I can speak on behalf of the LPGA. They're aware of how much betting action is going on. I mean, guys, at the end of the day, in 2022, this was a $7.5 billion industry, okay? That gives you an idea how big football is. But, you know, golf is 8% of total handle for the year. total handle is gross dollars bet, you know, at, across all operators or what you guys would call books or what people would just
in slang terms.
Yeah, I mean, $8 billion is a lot of cash. It'll be double digits this year. So they're aware of, like, when you go back to the Chicago story where the guy yelled when Max Homa was putting and everyone made a big deal about that. And, you know, golf is quiet, whereas football and baseball and basketball, everyone's cheering all the time. So it'd be tough for you to yell and, like, distract somebody. So they're aware of all these different things. And I think that the PGA Tour, they have a rock solid integrity policy, but they need to evolve. You know, basically player safety and security as far as that goes. And, you know, part of that is going to be, is an injury report necessary? Are we going to get to that point? It's not going to happen in the next year or two, I wouldn't think, but down the road, probably, you know, as the amounts increase, so will attention and so will resources. And that will allow them to hire someone that's basically keeping in touch with all the managers, coaches, agents, and players and saying, like, okay, you have to disclose injuries because that's the right thing to do. And that's why they do it in the other leagues.
I think it's super interesting, like, the way that you've set up Read the Line, where you found that sweet spot. Like, journalism and media, I think in general, is like, it went from, if you were a sports reporter, you had to, like, by definition, be objective. And, like, you couldn't pick a side. And then there were bloggers online, like, with all these takes and opinions. And I think those have kind of morphed into one and the same. And you were, I think, pretty early to that. So I'm curious just about Read the Line. Like, what is the setup? How do people sort of find you? And then, like, what is the content that you provide to people?
I can't brush over that because it's like it's a really, really important point
as
to why the two most searched golf items on, like, Google on a search engine online are instruction and gambling now. Right. So it's not like it's past equipment. You know, I mean, this is how much people are into this and they're learning. And the reason is that I write proactive content. Now, everything else is reactive content. So when I go to a tournament and the player shoots 63 or whatever, they come in the room and then they say, well, yeah, you know, I putted well today and the greens were firm and life was good and I liked the weather and the shirt was comfortable. Right. And then, like, 40 dudes go and men and women, they go and then they come up with their catchy social media posts and their articles and they put their same spin on all the same stuff. I write everything before it happens. So, yeah, I'm wrong more than I'm right. But if you're a consumer, that's way more engaging and entertaining for you to have that information ahead of time and then digest the content rather than afterwards being told what you saw. Right. You know, like, the worst broadcasters are the ones that state the obvious. They're like, you know, you never hear like Tony Romo and Jim Nance say, like, oh, they ran to the Patriots ran to the right. Well, no, you saw that on TV. So they will add to it. So what I believe I'm doing is I'm adding to the experience of the consumer that's watching or the fan that's watching or the better, you know, the contest. Because ahead of time, now you know what things to look for. So if I'm talking about the rough or the way the texture of the greens will play or the weather that's going to be coming or, you know, the type of short game shots, you know, all of these things I can break down because I'm a golf professional by trade. And then I combine them to the course that they're playing with the players that are in the field. And that's, like, just so much more interesting, you know, and people like data too. So at some point I have to take analytics. I have to compare to what I think is going to happen, you know? So the why of all of it that gets presented before the action even happens really, really, you know, entices the consumer to be, like, that much more emotionally connected to what's happening. And then, God forbid, they put $5 on it and their players in the mix, they're like, oh my God, $5 to win, you know, 500, I'm going to lose my mind, you know? And it's, you know, it's just tons and tons of fun. So the second part of your question is, what does Read the Line provide? Well, we're a media company. So every Wednesday we drop our newsletter. There's a paid version and a free version. The free version is truncated, so it doesn't have all of the picks that the paid version does. So paid will cover everything pre-tournament that I'm going to bet going into both the men's and women's event for that week. And that gets dropped into your inbox on a Wednesday morning. And then after that, people follow me on social media and we do live in-play bets and I put posts there on TikTok and we have all sorts of fun with that and Instagram and Twitter and everything. And I'm also published as a writer for Sports Illustrated, Sporting News, the LPGA's website, the PGA Tour's website, and I'll be doing the betting coverage for the PGA of America for Team USA for the Ryder Cup this week. So I'm almost like a golf betting wire service, as a matter of speaking. Andrew. It's like pretty crazy at this point, because you know golfers are a critical fan base, and they know what's authentic, and they know that I'm basically not full of shit because I've done it my whole life. You know, like it's real and it's fun.
Totally. Yeah. The consumer is pretty smart these days. I think they can sniff out anything that's pretty inauthentic. And I think you are for sure not that, which is cool. You mentioned the Ryder Cup. I think that's the perfect time to segue into sort of what we have coming up in the next couple of weeks here. You know, we're recording this. It's September 20th. So the teams are set. You know, we're starting to get some ideas of who might be matched up with who and what the pairings might look like. And I think some of the lines are starting to come together, but we'll talk about this. I know, you know, there's not enough action to bet on sort of pre Ryder Cup, I think. You know, there's just so much happening during the event, which again is like where you specialize. But can you give us like the 10,000 foot overview of how you think about the Ryder Cup from a betting perspective, and you know, what you've thought of leading up to Marco Simone here?
You know, the Ryder Cup is the perfect discussion for how my process works. And when I break down a tournament, so it actually doesn't matter that it's a team format or anything like that. What it comes down to is that, odds themselves, whether they're individual for winners or they are for which team is going to win this week or whatever it may be. I consider they're like sucker pins. If you go to the odds board first, then basically the magician has you at hello, right? Like you are sucked in, right? Okay. I, as a golf professional, right, like I have a bias. So the first thing I do is I go look at the golf course. I look at the architecture, the agronomy. What's the weather going to be like? What are the course conditions? What would it take if Tom and Andrew were players of mine and I was coaching them and we were going to go play in the Ryder Cup? What would you need to practice? What are you already good at? And what makes you, what gives you an advantage over the other players? So I start there, and then I look at the players, and then from there, you need to know how everyone is playing. How do we prove that? Well, we prove it with analytics. And then from there, then we go to the odds last, right? So the numbers come late for me, which is kind of the opposite of a lot of the other content that you see out there. It's like every article is like, hey, it's next week, it's par 71, 7,100 yards, and, you know, there's 24 players and 12 on each side. And then, you know, and then next thing you know, they're like, okay, strokes gained off the tee. And it's like, okay, well, like, there's a lot more going on a golf course than there is on a soccer pitch or something. You know, I mean, the course is the actual field of play, and that's the challenging part of it. So that's where I have a lot of fun with it. So I've broken down all 24 players and who will play well at Marco Simone based upon what the golf course asks you for and how those guys have played all year. I did the same thing last week with the Solheim Cup when the ladies played in Spain. And, it, you know, at the end of the day, if you do that, more often than not, those trends, how they match up to the golf course and the playing ability is going to help you do very well when it comes to the betting side of things. And I would do the same thing for the Ryder Cup. It's just then there's an extra layer of that onion that you got to peel back. And that is that, okay, now when they put JT with Jordan, does that make them a good match? And then who are they playing against, which won't happen till in play when we figure out when the captains start making their selections and their pairings.
Going off more of the less of the numbers focus, you brought up looking at pairings as a factor in the Ryder Cup, obviously different than a normal tour event. Do you, at the Ryder Cup, at the majors, at a designated event, FedEx, do you consider like the first timer bias, or is that a factor for you at all? Is it just if someone's coming in hot, they're going to remain hot regardless of this is the first time they've been at the Ryder Cup? They haven't shown well in big events previously.
I mean, all pressure is self-induced. So if somebody doesn't have the experience or they don't have the course knowledge and they're going against someone that does, they're definitely at a disadvantage. You know, the four rookies for each side are definitely at a disadvantage in any Ryder Cup, home or away. You know, I would give our rookies an advantage and actually a big advantage, not just because two of them won majors this year, but because we have the President's Cup. So guys like Sam Burns and Max Homa, who are rookies, aren't actually rookies to international team competition. And people like to say that, oh, you know, like the Ryder Cup's a bigger deal than the President's Cup. The big deal is not letting your teammates down. So if you're Max Homa and you went and proved to yourself that you wouldn't let your team down at Quail Hollow last year, then you're probably not going to do it this year, or that's not going to be the reason that you don't play well. You might not be playing well in general, but he just had a seventh out in Napa. So I think that, you know, Max will be fine versus somebody like Nikolai Højgaard, who's like basically just walking into it. right? And, you know, they could try to protect those guys and put them with veterans as much as they want, but at some point on Sunday, you're out there all alone, you know, and a rookie's a rookie. So there's definitely, you know, and if it's a major, if it's Augusta, I mean, anything, that it definitely comes into, you know, one of the major factors, I think, as far as, you know, how to predict what you think is going to be the outcome.
Yeah, on the pairings and the teams, what do you think about where the teams landed in the captain's picks? I know this is different from betting, but it's worth asking, like, how do you think Zach Johnson and Luke Donald have done, at least in the team creation perspective so far?
I think most people are just kind of ignorant, and that doesn't mean dumb. It just means that they're not educated on a certain, you know, situation, right? They don't have all the information, you know, and everyone talking about, you know, we don't want JT because of the way he was playing or whatever, right? Okay. At the end of the day, the PGA of America, they've hired an analytics team. Okay. The European team hired an analytics team. They follow these guys for years and they know exactly what they're good at and they know what the golf course requires. So all of those picks are based upon how they think they're going to do for Italy, you know, this time around, how they think they were going to do last time for Whistling Straits. Remember, the last guy on that team in Wisconsin was Scottie Scheffler, and he waxed John Rahm the last day, okay? Now, in my mind, that's not luck, okay? And the fact that he has 6 wins since then and a major is not luck for Scottie Scheffler, and he's the best ball striker in the world, right? Like, if you start to look at these things over time, those people know. They know what's not necessarily what is exactly going to happen, but they could start to predict trends. So for me to sit and criticize what Europe has been doing for years, and Europe hired an analytics team way before we did, which is why they've been more successful over time, and the whole team bonding thing. I mean, they had 12 guys play 2 weeks ago in the BMW, and we got 2 guys in Napa. I mean, we had more assistant captains playing the Fortinet than we have players. And they had all 12 playing, including their captain. They all made the cut, including the captain over there in Wentworth. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I think I'm just saying, in a lot of ways, us copying them having their own little buddies club, is that really a bad idea? I mean, because they've been pretty darn successful.
Totally.
The hiring of an analytics team kind of pulls me into a question I wanted to ask you before. I don't know. I'm ignorant on that topic. I don't know where these analytics people come from, but you know, I come from a baseball background initially. That's the sport I grew up playing and knowing. The Moneyball era was my era. I'm a Red Sox fan as well. So that's the analytics world I love. I don't care where the people have come from. I'll take the data science major who can look at things with no golf background and figure it out. Do you think golf could, if that's been successful for the European team, which we've seen, and the U.S. team used it in Whistling, which was extremely successful, do you fear that we can end up with 20 data science guys rather than 20 golf guys picking the team? It's a question that, you know, has been asked for years. It's not a new topic, but you seem to be sitting right in the middle of it. So I'm curious as your take on that.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we categorize it by saying that there are golf people taking the science and then using it as a, you know, they're filtering it for then people to make decisions. It's like if you come and take a golf lesson from me and there's a TrackMan or a launch monitor sitting there, right? Okay. So that thing spits out 21 different values every time you hit it, you make a swing, about how the club head moves, the speed of it, how the ball moves, the trajectory, all of those things. It's my job to filter that to you. So everyone has access to these numbers. They're sitting there on the PGAtour.com website, right? But it comes down to, like, who knows how to break those numbers down and apply them properly, right? So there's a science in all of that. And there are golf people, or there are sports-specific people in each one of those sports. So if you have a firm, let's say it's Sports Numbers, you know, LLC or whatever it is, right? If they're giving out baseball numbers, there's a baseball guy there interpreting them. You know, and that was my whole point with Read the Line, was that I saw all of this golf betting content, and then I would go question those people and say, like, well, what about the agronomy or whatever? And people couldn't explain themselves. And I'm like, well, you're just looking at numbers and you're using them as a crutch. And I'm not saying that you can't, that won't get you pretty far, but I have 24 wins in the last 20 months, pre-tournament, over men and women. And there's no statistical data for the women. So, like, how do I get it right? right? I get it right enough that we make a lot of money. I've predicted over 900 bets this season on Read the Line to the people that pay for my subscription, right? And there's a 14% net return. I mean, that's better than Wall Street, right? I mean, the people you follow that are on Bleacher Report or whatever for the NFL, they're picking like 45%, and I'm picking 64% of the time, and I'm giving you a net return of 14%. So yes, the data is super important, but also is the critical eye that can then apply it properly. You know, and at the end of the day, I think that that's the evolution that has made, that will make all records, you know, to a certain degree kind of fall, because we're getting better athletes. And at the end of the day, you know, that's the reason they're shooting better scores.
For the Ryder Cup specifically, can you talk about like what content you'll be putting out? And like, you know, one of the ways like I would think about it is like if Justin and Jordan do get paired together, which I think they very likely will, like, I almost have to hammer the other side of that just because I feel like the public will love that so much. And like, it's less about who will win that matchup, but like, where are the mispricings? And I'm curious how you would think about that on pairings day and at the Ryder Cup specifically.
Well, you know, the lines are pretty tight as far as the pricings go. There is a bit of shopping around you can do, which will give you a little bit of leverage, but the folks at the companies like Kambi that are setting all the lines and then selling them to DraftKings and FanDuel and so on and so forth, they know what they're doing. And the lines were tight at the President's Cup last year. The lines will be, you know, they were tight last week for the Solheim, and they will be tight for, you know, it's almost looser when there's a regular tour event because there's 156 players and the books look for opportunities to take advantage of bettors. Right. So there'll be more fluctuation of odds, but these are almost going to be treated like four football games. Whereas by the time you get to kickoff, that line is going to be as tight across the entire board as you can imagine. And it won't be off by much because you're basically splitting hairs. Because if you have Rory and Victor tee off against, Xander and Cantlay, you're talking about that's four players in the top six in the world. Right. The only difference is like what they had for supper. You know, like, so at the end of the day, it's pretty easy to set those lines, home field advantage whatsoever, you know, but like, there's way more fun with that or way more opportunity in an event that has a much larger field. This is going to be pretty tight. It's almost, in many ways, it's almost like a football game where you just don't get that kind of leverage until it goes live. And then you start to look at opportunities on the golf course and you say, oh, geez, well, there's a par five, a drivable par four, a par three, and then this coming up, and they're down by one, but I'm going to hammer that number now because I know that these guys were going to be a better alternate shot team and they're coming into their wheelhouse right now. And when you know those types of things, that's when you're going to have your opportunities in these team matches and where you had them last week in the Solheim Cup to make the move. Yeah. Versus just like on opening ceremonies when everyone's excited and Zach and Luke come out with their pairings and they're like, oh, you know, it's foursomes in the morning. And then, you know, Xander and Patrick, they've, you know, they're undefeated in foursomes and in seven matches. And I'm, you know, it's just the best part about it is that the Ryder Cup matches, Solheim Cup, President's Cup, get everybody way more focused on in-play betting, which is the future of this whole thing. And we're really going to see it next January when Tiger and Rory introduce their arena league. I mean, that whole thing's going to be in-play betting. Yeah. And it's going to be awesome.
That's a good point. I want to touch on that in 1 second. We'll close out the Ryder Cup here with,
all right,
if you had to pick right now, are you leaning one way just at the team side? I know the U.S., it looks like they're still around like minus 130 is what I'm seeing, but that was like minus 250 6 months ago. So if you had to pick right now, are you leaning one way?
Well, the books have what's called a domestic bias. I don't know if you knew this, but Americans think very highly of themselves. So when you didn't have the names that were on the team, it was easy to say, you know, it would be like if there was a Boston, New York Ryder Cup, okay? And they would make the lines such that, you know, they would prey upon your ego. Okay. And that's what they're doing there. And then when they put the names in and things become way more real, then they come back towards the mean, right? They come back towards the middle. By the time they go off, it's probably almost going to be even, I'm guessing. I bet the line's going to be somewhere around like minus 110 US, plus 120 Europe is going to be my guess when it starts. Unless there's some kind of major story between when we're recording this on the 20th and when it starts, you know, next Friday. But I also want people ask me this question all the time, and it's kind of a kooky thing, but there's two bets that are out there, right? It is who will win and who will lift the cup. And everyone thinks, isn't that one and the same, Keith? And I get asked that question all the time in passing, and it's not. And the odds reflect that, right? So who will lift the cup is without ties, right? So the odds are different there, right? Because you can't have a tie, because if there's a tie, the U.S. keeps it, right? But then who will win, you have to account for the tie. And that the odds that you were looking at, Andrew, were the ones that who will win, right? So that's the difference between those two. Right. So if you see those, make sure you just click on the one that you want to click on. So that's a little PSA for your listeners there. But at the end of the day, I'm taking the U.S.
I love it. That was amazing.
You had mentioned Tiger and Rory's Arena League heading up, and we want to just close out with your final thoughts on that. But really, you've been talking a lot about what's coming for golf. And I've said a few times, you hold a special spot in the golf world. You're one of the most tuned in people with the tour. With all global golf operations. So what has you most excited about Tiger's new creation and then anything else on the horizon that we need to be looking out for?
Well, when you talk about golf's popularity, I mentioned in the opening, that I had spent some time down there during the Tiger boom at Tiger's home club, and everything kind of subsided over time. And I don't necessarily even think that was economy driven. It was just like, parts of golf, people just got interested in other things. Well, this popularity, it continues to rise in golf. And whether it's the discussion of disruption with LIV that's helped carry the conversation since the pandemic, or just people are really starting to enjoy their golf, or there's more golf resources like Topgolf and indoor mini golf, bars and stuff. I mean, there's all sorts of fun things to do. The next evolution of this thing is what's going to come out in January. And I think they're going to make a major announcement the day after the Ryder Cup, because that's 100 days before their first match. I'm pretty sure if I did the math right. And they're building an arena to play simulator golf in and head-to-head matchups with the best players in the world. So who's not going to tune in to watch Tiger play Rory and their buddies, which is like Max Homa and Colin Morikawa versus JT and Justin Rose? I mean, like, who's not going to tune in to watch this for 2 hours on a Monday night, which is climate controlled? They're going to have a huge, like, 60-foot screen that's 50 feet wide that they're going to hit shots into. And everyone just assumes, like, oh, they're going to, like, it's simulator golf. They're going to go play Pebble Beach. They're not. They're going to create these wild match play style golf courses like they've tried to do with Marco Simone and then in 2018 at the Ryder Cup with Le Golf National when they played in France. I mean, they're going to have the guys bet head-to-head against one another. This thing is going to be so cool, and it's going to be 2 hours of, like, just complete in-game, like, who wins the next hole? Who wins this match? It's just going to be going on. And much like the Manning cast, you're going to start to see in the future of golf, you're going to see people talking about these different edges, because no one really cares about, why that guy three-putted that hole. They just want to, they care about what's going to happen next. And, we segue to a guy who's, coming down the stretch, and, I didn't have him to win, or maybe I had somebody else to win, but even to make a top 10, and the guy's leaking oil. I mean, there's all these fantastic stories that we'll be able to promote through the gaming side of golf that are going to get people even more entertained and engaged by the game. So, I mean, coming down the pipeline, we'll have to make a date for, 7 or 8 months from now, but like, we did need to do a whole nother show about the future of where golf's going, but I can assure you this, the popularity of it all is we're barely just scratching the surface. It's so cool.
That gets me super excited.
That has me very excited away. For what Tiger and crew is about to do.
And definitely we'll put a pin in that. 7 or 8 months from now, we'll circle back and get back on.
Really appreciate the time, Keith. We will definitely direct our listeners to readtheline.com here. And we'll look out for you next week at the Ryder Cup. And we'll definitely look to get you back on the calendar in a few months when we have a bigger sense of where the golf world is headed, and appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, thanks for all you guys do to promote the game at Banty, and go Team USA. Let's do it.
Swing it like a boomerang, a tank, come around, round, wanna hit the top.
Ooh, la, 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 la.
Chip, puck, you know what's the big whoop? When I play my game, and then I make my mama proud.
Woo! Smash, bang, you gotta hit the ball far. Then the crowd goes, woo! Then you hear the
ooh da la la la.
Treat, treat. I want my birdies all day long. Let the bogeys go and say, hey.
Ooh da la la la. Hey.
You wanna play with the pros now?
Hey.
You gotta hit it in the hole now?
Hey.
You wanna reach that top, yeah?
Hey.